Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 4 of week number 23, studying Matthew chapter 23. As we get started, these reminders: for all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. There you will find links to everything that we offer: audio and video files, print materials, ebooks, Bible reading schedules, links to our IGH 260 broadcasts, and links to our Bible study courses. New this week, a sermon delivered by John William McGarvey on July 2, 1893. The premise, in McGarvey's own words: imagine that we have never heard the word baptism. McGarvey works his way through the New Testament, and when he arrives at a text using the word baptism, he does all that he can to let that text explain its meaning. To hear and to read his message, go to our free page at internationalgospelhour.com. You can also find McGarvey's sermon linked at our Facebook page, facebook.com/internationalgospelhour. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. Text IGHFREE to 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org to get started, or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call toll-free 1-855-IGH-6988 for a free 30-lesson series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com. Let's return to our study of Matthew 23. In our last program, we noted that Jesus' first concern about the scribes and the Pharisees was this: they desired to sit in Moses' seat. Jesus, as he taught what it meant to be his kingdom disciples, always emphasized the need to be last rather than first, the need to serve rather than to be served, and the ongoing need to put others first in all things. What these religious leaders did, however, went against what Jesus taught. Jesus taught servanthood, but not so the scribes and the Pharisees. The expression "to sit in Moses' seat" was not about sitting in some special chair. It was all about occupying the same position, the same authority as did Moses. The scribes and the Pharisees viewed themselves as the successors of Moses. And that's why Jesus was so intensely critical of their beliefs and their behavior. First, they assumed that they stood in Moses' place, if not with the fullest power and authority that Moses had, then at least as those who alone could rightfully interpret Moses and the law. In reality, Jesus was the prophet that Moses anticipated, Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15 and following, not the scribes or the Pharisees. Jesus' role as the prophetic fulfillment of Moses, and thus Jesus' authority, was in direct opposition to their assumed position and their assumed authority. Their allegiance to their traditions did not substantiate their claims, and Jesus critiqued those traditions as well as the scribes and the Pharisees themselves. Second, because of their assumption that they stood in the seat of Moses, they believed that what they said was divinely binding. In other contexts, Jesus accused the religious leaders of elevating their traditions, not just to the level of God's Word, but elevating them to the point that they were greater, higher, more important than God's Word. Jesus challenged their position and their supposed authority throughout his ministry, with this chapter being the greatest, most extensive critical assessment of their teachings. Did we make a big deal about Moses' seat? Yes, we did. But that image and its related criticism accurately depicted what these religious leaders were all about. Furthermore, understanding where the scribes and the Pharisees thought they were, and where Jesus said that they really were, makes it easier to understand the rest of Jesus' critique. the scribes and the Pharisees not only imagined, they acted like they were the successors of Moses. They did so by telling everyone else what to do. In our previous remarks, we noted only the negative side of the Pharisees' desire to sit in Moses' seat. To be sure, most of what could and should be said about their assumptive role as Moses' successors deserves criticism, but there are a few positive things to note. In Matthew 23:3, Jesus instructed the multitudes to do whatever the scribes and the Pharisees told them to do. If they were so wrong to assume that they occupied Moses' seat, then why would Jesus encourage the multitudes to follow what they said? The answer, Jesus did not say that the multitudes should blindly follow everything that these religious leaders bound on them. If they taught something true, and much of what they taught was true, then the multitudes were obligated to do what they said, but not just because they said it, but rather because it was the right thing to do. Jesus addressed the limits of how far the multitudes should go in following the scribes and the Pharisees. They were to do what they were instructed to do, but they were not to follow the works of these religious leaders. Why not? Because, as Jesus went on to say, they imposed harsh and restrictive requirements on others, but they refused to do anything themselves to fulfill those excessive requirements. Jesus, who knew their hearts and their motivation, tells us why. They wanted to be noticed by others. Earlier, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addressed those who gave, those who fasted, and those who prayed so that others would see their good works. Giving, fasting, and prayer are all good things to do, but we must do them to glorify God and not to seek our own glory. Jesus did not identify who was engaged in doing good works for personal glory in that context, the Sermon on the Mount, but he did not hesitate here to state that this type of religion described what the scribes and the Pharisees were doing. The Sermon on the Mount that we just referred to decried ostentatious giving, prayer, and fasting. Jesus added other outward ways that the scribes and the Pharisees called attention to themselves. First, Jesus said that they make their phylacteries broad, chapter 23, verse 5. Second, Jesus said that they enlarge the borders of their garments, chapter 23, verse 5. Third, Jesus said that they sought the best places at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues, chapter 23, verse 6. Fourth, they wanted to be recognized wherever they went as teachers, desiring to be called rabbi even in the marketplaces, Matthew 23, verse 7. Let's explore each of these in more detail. What's a phylactery? And what did the scribes and Pharisees do to make it broad? And what was so bad about doing so? A phylactery was a box-like leather capsule containing biblical passages that are worn on one's arm and head. In several First Testament texts, God instructed Israel to keep his words before them. They were told, as Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 8 says, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes." Though it appears that God was only figuratively directing Israel to keep his word before them, some interpreted God's word literally, and they wore leather armbands and headbands with pouches attached to them. Inside those leather pouches were biblical texts, sometimes written on even smaller pieces of leather. If you read through the rabbinic literature, you will discover a rather lengthy list of rules about how these phylacteries were to be made, how the leather was to be processed, what scriptures were to be included, how large a phylactery was supposed to be, how many of them you should wear, when you should wear them, and much more. The point, everything about phylacteries was determined and governed by extra biblical tradition. The tradition was extra biblical, meaning that there was no biblical foundation for the reasons and the specific practices as they were handed down. Moreover, even assuming the legitimacy of wearing something to show one's faith, even allowing that it was done, motivationally to glorify God, Jesus' criticism was that the scribes and the Pharisees went overboard in what they did. They did not just wear phylacteries, they made them large, and they did so in order to call attention to themselves. It was done in such a way that their behavior could not be missed. Two thoughts before moving forward. First, it's not at all ironic that the root word behind make broad refers to a wide road, something that could not be missed. The scribes and the Pharisees certainly did not want their outward religious displays to be overlooked. And second, Paul used that same word that appears here in Matthew 23, verse 5, twice when he wrote to the church at Corinth. In 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 11, he said, "O Corinthians, we have spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open." The words "wide open" translate the same term rendered as "broaden" in Matthew 23. Two verses later, in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, Paul hoped for reciprocity on their part. "Now, in return for the same, I speak as to children, you also be open." Second, Jesus said that these religious leaders enlarged the borders of their garments. Though not identical to making their phylacteries broader, the principle employed here has not changed. In Numbers 15, verses 37 and following, we read this, "Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel. Tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and to put a blue thread in the tassels of the corners. And you shall have the tassel, that you may look upon it, and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined, and that you may remember and do all my commandments, and be holy for your God. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God.'" That's Numbers chapter 15, verses 37 through 41. The tassels, rendered as borders of the garment in Matthew 23, 5, were a reminder to Israel that they were not to follow harlotry, but that they were rather to remember and do all my commandments. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 23. This reminder as we conclude, to start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.